microphone on the front so you can hear me. Eddie, thank you so much for those songs. If you can't be happy after singing songs like that, I don't know what will make you happy. Eddie accuses me of being a happy guy. We've talked several times when we go out and eat, and several of us, and we talk about what we mentioned, the joys of being a Christian. Have you ever thought about that seriously, though? Are those just words? Have you thought about the joys of being a Christian? What is it that makes us, as we like to say, happy? Happy is not a word that I really understand what that means. If that's happy-go-lucky and our feet are always happy and nothing bad happens to us, that does not exist, brethren. I don't understand that kind of happiness. What I do understand is joy. What I do understand is peace of mind. And in that, if you want to call that happy, that's the man that I try to be and what I want to be and what I try and bring others to do also. But it all begins with two important laws. And they are laws that I believe are universal for all men from all time. I believe it started in the Garden of Eden, and I believe it continues on. In Matthew chapter 22, Jesus had a discourse with the Sadducees in which they had a question about, you know, they didn't believe in resurrection, and basically Jesus shut him up on that. Now the Pharisees that were standing there believe in the resurrection, and they're saying, "You go, Jesus." You know, you bet. He got him on that one. But now it's our turn. And a lawyer, a man who is a scribe, who knows the law of Moses forwards and backwards and probably has all the books memorized. That is how intelligent these men were. They had a lot of knowledge. They knew everything that was in the book. In verse 34, he says, "But when the Pharisees heard that he had silenced the Sadducees, they gathered together. Then one of them, a lawyer, asked a question, testing him and saying," now notice, he's testing him. Now, whether he's testing him in a way to try and catch him in something, I don't know. Or if he's just trying to test Jesus, see, well, how much do you really know about the law? I am one of the scribes. I'm one of the lawyers. He says, "Teacher, which is the great commandment in the law?" And Jesus said to him, "You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind." And that's all the lawyer asked. But Jesus continued, "This is the first and great commandment, and the second is like it. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. On these two commandments hang all the law and the prophets." In the account in Mark, in chapter 12, in verse 32, we see what this scribe's answer was to Jesus, or what he said to Jesus in this answer. He said, "So the scribe said to him, 'Well said, teacher, you have spoken the truth, for there is one God, and there is no other but he. And to love him with all your heart, with all your understanding, with all your soul, and with all your strength, and to love one's neighbor as oneself is more than all the whole burnt offerings and sacrifices.'" Now when Jesus saw that he answered wisely, he said to him, "You're not far from the kingdom of God." And after this, they didn't ask Jesus any more questions. I want to look at what is it that brings joy and contentment to people. What does it take to be joyful and content? And I believe it's these two laws. Brethren, if we can understand these two laws and do our best to fulfill them, you can have joy and peace and contentment. The first law we can read about in the book of Leviticus. In chapter 19, they have this law here of how they're supposed to treat their fellow man. Everybody knows that we are to honor God. Everybody knows that we need to love him. That's the first and great law. To do God's will. But I don't think you can fulfill that unless you also complete the second one too. And I think this is what Jesus is teaching them. To follow the great command to love the Lord your God with all your heart can't be done unless you also love your fellow man with the same intensity. And he draws these similarities. But in Leviticus, he shows how to take care of their fellow man. He says, "When you reap the harvest of your land, you shall not wholly reap the corners of your field. Neither shall you gather the gleanings of your harvest. And you shall not glean your vineyard, neither shall you gather every grape of your vineyard. You shall leave them to the poor and the stranger. I am the Lord your God. You shall not steal, neither deal falsely, neither lie to one another. And you shall not swear by my name falsely, neither shall you profane the name of the Lord, the name of your God. I am the Lord. You shall not defraud your neighbor, neither rob him. The wages of him that is hired shall not abide with you all night until the morning. You shall not curse the deaf, nor put a stumbling block before the blind. You shall not, but you shall fear your God. I am the Lord. You shall not do unrighteousness in judgment. You shall not respect the person of the poor, nor honor the person of the mighty. But in righteousness shall you judge your neighbor. You shall not go up and down as a talebearer among your people. Neither shall you stand against the blood of your neighbor. I am the Lord. You shall not hate your brother in your heart. You shall in any wise rebuke your neighbor and not suffer sin on him. You shall not avenge nor bear any grudge against the children of your people. But you shall love your neighbor as yourself. I am the Lord. What Jesus is doing in these that we see in these gospel accounts of this is calling them back to the pure word of the law. By this time in Israel's history, they had grown very corrupt. You can read the history of what was going on through Josephus. You can read even in the scriptures here in Matthew and the accounts in Acts and on through to see what the Jews had become, these chosen people of God. It was their duty to serve and love the Lord their God. And it was their duty to take care of the stranger, to take care of their neighbors. This idea of eye for eye, tooth for tooth. This idea is of Jesus saying, you've been told to love those that are close to you, to love your friends, but to hate your enemy. Nowhere in the law did it say, hate your enemy. This is the way that they had been teaching, though. There were certainly some things that Israel could not do with other nations, but one of them was not to hate them, and one of them was to be a shining light to draw them to God in the first place. The temple was set up in such a way that even Gentiles could go and worship God. The purpose of the law and the prophets, the purpose of God is love. And the idea is that love the Lord your God and love your fellow man as much as you love God. But he also says love them as much as yourself. Now when we think of that, that could be kind of egotistical, saying, man, I love me. But brethren, if you don't love yourself, then you can't even follow those first two commandments, can you? Because first of all, you have to recognize, you have to love yourself so much to recognize that you are in sin, that you are imperfect. All of us are. And if I don't love myself enough for that, then I'm not going to seek to follow the first and great command, and that is to love the Lord my God. Another thing that we think about is, we love ourselves so much, we're going to make sure we take care of our food, our clothing, and our shelter. We take care of those needs, don't we? That's because we love ourselves. We do everything we can to make sure that we are happy, or at least that any misery that we might suffer in this world is kept to a minimum. Do we not do that? There's nothing wrong with that. That's just natural. I want to have the easiest life I can with the least amount of trouble. I love me like that. But I need to love my neighbor in the same way. And that's what these two commands tell us to do. To love the Lord your God and to love your neighbor as you love yourself. So if I'm going to take care of myself in those ways, anytime I have opportunity, and as we saw in this book, in the book of Leviticus, there was a way provided for those that needed assistance with food. And so in this law here, they were able to provide for the poor. We love ourselves. And it's not that we are seeking to be better than anybody, but for what we do to take care of ourselves, both physically and spiritually, we need to be doing the same thing for our fellow man. And that's where the second law comes in. Because if we're not doing that, we're not fulfilling the first and greatest command, and that is to honor God and to follow his commands. The question was asked by one, Jesus, who is my neighbor? And we are all familiar with the story of the Good Samaritan. And he shows how that those two that were very religious, you had the priest and the Levite, who attended to the worship of God, who attended to the sacrifices, who were the spiritual leaders, how they passed by the one in need. They violated law number two, did they not? And in so doing, that violates law number one. So it's showing them that even somebody that was hated among them as the Samaritan came along and did what was necessary to do of following the second law. He's reminding the people of how corrupt they had become, and that even a person that they viewed and judged as corrupt and unworthy was the one that was actually following the law. Who is my neighbor? Usually we don't have any problem about taking care of our friends or our family or those that are very close to us in the church. But sometimes we're more hesitant about helping those that are outside of the world, are we not? Let's be honest. There are opportunities that we have of helping people that are not members of the church, that are not within our circle. And now we see some people out on the street and stuff that we might consider are bums and not worthy. And I'm not saying that you go around and help people that won't help themselves. That's not my intent. But at the same time, we have to be careful in what our judgment is, because there's one who's the judge, and that is God. Sometimes maybe we just need to take the risk that, hey, maybe we got burned, maybe we got taken advantage of our money or whatever it might be, and not be guilty of maybe passing by somebody because of our prejudgment of them. These are things that we have to answer for ourselves. But this is one way we can help take care of those that are on the outside, that those that are not members of the church. But we have to fulfill our love for our neighbor in some way. We might use the excuse that, well, you know, Joe, the government takes care of the poor. They've got all these kind of programs. And there's several organizations in the community that take care of that. And that is great. It really is. There are people that need help. And this is one avenue in which they can be helped. But we as Christians have individual duties. The purpose of helping is to show the love of God, to show the joy and the contentment that we have, that we have received grace and mercy from God in our salvation. If that doesn't bring us joy and contentment, then we need to focus on what it means to be loving the Lord our God and understanding what has been done for us and the grace and the mercy that he has shown upon us that we might have from remission of sins. The second law is intended for us to be able to show what we can't see, only what we know about what we've read, but to manifest it into action and for others to see the grace and the mercy and the blessings we have received from God, that they too might share in that. Because God is merciful to the just and the unjust. He sends rain to them all. Everybody has this blessing from God. And they are ours to take care of as we have opportunity. From the abundance that God has given us, we should help others that need help. Whether in the congregation individually, as a church we may do that, but also we need as individuals to be out and helping those that are less fortunate. When we look at being happy, what does it mean? It means to be content and to be joyful for the mercy that God has shown upon us. And we need to share that with others. And by being happy in the public, your light just might shine and draw them. These are opportunities we have to help other people. So how do we do it? How do we handle conflicts in the world and things like that? When it talks about love your neighbor as yourself, and we read about how we are not to harm other people when conflict comes and these evil people manifest themselves in such ways that they insult us and do all kinds of harm, how are we to respond? The law tells us to treat others as we would treat as we want them to treat us. And that doesn't mean if somebody comes and hits me, well, I'm going to hit him back. That's the way he wanted to be treated. We have to look at our own lives and see how it is that we can best manifest the love of God. And one of those ways is Jesus gave several examples. Now, we live in a different world than this, but in Matthew chapter 5, Jesus taught them to show compassion on people. And this is a weird way to show compassion, because he told them to, if somebody compels you to go 1 mile, go with them two. Now, in this time, the Romans were in control of Jerusalem and Israel. And it was very lawful that a Roman soldier could grab anybody that was non-Roman and make them carry his load for 1,000 paces, or as it says here, for 1 mile. And what does Jesus say? He says, if you're compelled to go 1 mile, you have to do it. That's what they had to do. He says, go with him too. And what does this do? What's the principle of this? He says, the first one you did because you had to. The second one, I want you to do it because it's the good thing to do for your neighbor. Just carry his load. And I think that if you think about it, if you are walking in somebody else's shoes and seeing what they have to deal with, you might have a little more empathy, you might have more compassion, and understand where they are coming from and why they might be the way they are. Now, people are grumpy. Don't just go up, man, they're just grumpy. Why are they grumpy? What are they walking in? What is their load? In Galatians 6 and verse 2, we're told to bear one another's burdens. I don't know if that's what he's trying to teach here with this about the Roman, but think about it like this. If he did carry this pack and the Roman says, okay, I'll take it. No, let me carry another mile for you. What kind of opportunity might that bring to the Roman about a Jew or somebody that loves God and is following after Jesus? Might it create an opportunity? Might it plant a seed for them to evaluate their own lives on the way they are? I think that is why we need to help those that are less fortunate than us, not only because it's a command, but the opportunity it brings to show the love of God. And by showing our love for fellow man, then we can accomplish that. Another thing Jesus says, if a man slaps your cheek, give him your other cheek. I don't think we're talking about a physical slap in the cheek. If you got slapped or spit, that's an insult. So it's talking about people that insult each other. Are you insulted? How do you handle that? How do you do that in the world? Jesus says, treat them the way you would want to be treated. There's several references we see of how to treat the evil people, and how if we're kind to them, we'll heap coals of fire on their head. The reason that we act this way in following this second command is hopefully that we'll plant a seed. Or maybe they will see that the reaction of the one that is godly is somebody they would like to be. And sometimes what makes us the most angry is whenever we lose control of our temper and we see that the person that we might be screaming or yelling at is remaining calm and it's not affecting them, and it makes us even angrier because I'm mad, I want you to be mad. But my friend, you can't get me mad like that. You can't do it. I'm in a very neat position in my job. I never thought I would like where I work because I was a real nurse. I saved lives and I was in there in the thick and thin. No way would I go into psychiatric care. That's not real nursing there. You know, those aren't the real nurses. And I was only planning on doing it for just a few months until I could figure out where I really wanted to go to be a real nurse. But I've been there almost 5 years, and I want to tell you, brethren, it's been an eye-opener to me. It's been an eye-opener at how miserably I've failed at number two. Because, see, these are the same people I judged as unworthy. The people I take care of, a lot of them are the alcoholics, or they've been using drugs their whole life. And some of them have gotten so severe that they have these mental illnesses and stuff, the schizophrenia, they hear voices. I mean, they're just tormented. They're tormented people. And so I'm there and I'm having to take care of them. The eye-opener was for me, there's two patients I've had throughout the 5 years I've been there, and I see them fairly often. I will never forget them. They will be with me the rest of my life for this reason. And visiting with one of them, this man, he's probably in his late 50s, hears voices all the time, a tormented person. He gets angry, agitated, and he can come and he can cuss me out and everything, and I just stand there. And I don't respond to it, because that's what we're trained to do. Don't feed into it. Don't respond to it. And as he gets treatment, we sit down and we start visiting. And I get to hear about his whole life. A woman that I take care of, she's just a year older than me. She even knows some of my family. Been involved in drugs, alcohol, all of this. Life is miserable, usually homeless, doesn't know when she's going to eat. Both of them, same deal. And then I found out they were members of the church. I found out that this brother and this sister in Christ, they made the wrong choices, sure. But do we use that as an excuse that you deserve to live the way you live because of the choices you made? Brethren, we can't turn our backs on them. And further, in visiting with at least one of them, trying to get help. And the church was judgmental in that way, saying, no, you deserve what you got. You did that. We told you. If you go after this lifestyle, this is what's going to happen. Yes, it's true. It happened. But how do you fulfill the second law in this? I'll never forget. All these people that I have to deal with now have brought back more compassion and understanding. And it's not that it's justified. It's not that I don't recognize that the majority of the people I deal with, they brought these things on themselves. But think about what Jesus Christ did for us. What if he had decided, you know, I'm not going to go through with it. You deserve what you got. I told you, if you live this kind of life, you're going to be condemned. I told you, if you live this kind of life, you're going to suffer all these consequences. I'm through with it. Let's think about how we treat the other people and before being too judgmental on how we take care of them. And that's what my job has taught me, is to be a little bit more compassionate. And being more compassionate and being more understanding, I recognize more and more what God has done for me. and that brings me joy. Sounds like a sad story, but it's not. I have perfect contentment now because I know who my God is. I know what his promises are, and I am so confident that he can fulfill. And in doing so and fulfilling number one, I'm learning more and more about how to fulfill number two. Not perfect at it by any means. Lots of missed opportunities. And as I grow in that, maybe there are more opportunities I'll learn of how I can help other people. But brethren, that's what we're supposed to do, is take care of our neighbor, whether they be within the congregation and taking care of those who are sick and ill. And I think we have a fantastic group of people here that do that. Those that are sick, those that are homebound and stuff, we do a great job, I believe, of taking care of those. The thing, when you do that, do you ever feel joy in doing that? Or do you feel like it's a duty? We are compelled to visit the fatherless and the widows. We're compelled by rules that we are to take care of the sick of our congregation or those that are in need. But don't you always go a little above beyond that? Don't you go that extra mile? And you do that out of love. And I've never been in any place where I visited somebody that was sick or helped somebody in need that I didn't go away feeling a bit more happy and a bit more at peace of taking care of my fellow man, not because of what I did, but because of what God has done and how that is translated for them to see also the love of God. Because all of us give God credit for that, don't we? We thank God for the friends we have and for what they have done. God receives the glory for it. Why am I happy? I'm content because I know what Jesus Christ has done for me. I'm content and I'm happy because I know that if I love the Lord my God with all my heart, with all my soul, with all my being, he will save me. And I know that if I fulfill commandment number two, of taking care of my fellow man, of taking care of my neighbor, of seeing the important things, of getting rid of our vision of what this world is and putting our hopes and our dreams and building our happiness on the things of this world, of the material things, brethren, that there's no happiness there. It's only temporary. This is something nobody can take from you. This is the joy and the contentment you can have. There's a lot of things I want to say. There's a lot of other points I had, but I want to stop there. I want to leave it with that thought. The joy of being a Christian is the grace and the mercy that we have received from God. It's from the very beginning, from Genesis all the way through. The whole entire scriptures are about the love of God and how to fulfill that love. How to show that we love God. And to love God is by keeping his commandments, by learning his will. And his will is that you love your neighbor as yourself and that you share that message with them. Out of the abundance that God gives you, share it with those that are less fortunate than you. There are plenty around. If you don't know the joy of being a Christian, I hope this will send you on a type of a step to learning what it is to be joyful, to what it is to be content, to have peace of mind. If you listen to the world news and all the events that are going on or all the different tragedies that might happen, man, you could be one of the most miserable people in the world. And while those things aren't sad, those are things that are just going to occur. There's nothing new under the sun. Those things are always going to happen. So live your life in joy in God. Live your life of peace. Take care of those that you can take care of, that you have the ability to do. If you want to know how to do that, then turn to God. Put your full faith and confidence in him. Believe that Jesus Christ, the Son of God, came to this earth and died for your sins, that you might receive the grace and mercy required, that you might have salvation. Be baptized for the remission of your sins, showing a good conscience toward God in obedience to God's will. And remain faithful. Live a life of confession. Confess with your life that Jesus Christ is the Lord. And we do that by obedience to the great commandment and the second greatest commandment of all. If there is any way we can help you at all, would you please come as together we stand and sing.